We've already thrown up a poll question this morning, Elliot, and gotten 500 votes already early this morning. The Leafs are off to an inconsistent start. What is most responsible? Yep. The player's effort, the coaching, or the front office? Right now it's 52% player's effort, 42% coaching, 6% front office. I mean, we're all in full agreement with that. The majority rules here. These highly paid players simply have to start playing better, and especially without the puck.
Well, there's no question about that. I think that's true. Like, first of all, I think in situations like this, it's easy to blame one person, but it's not like one person or one group is at fault. Like, and that's one thing I think that, you know, people are wondering, is Babcock in trouble? The sense is, for me, is no. And I think one of the things that the organization is trying to stress here is that they're all in this together. Like, if this doesn't go well, or the worst-case scenario happens, which I don't think will happen if they miss the playoffs, you know, nobody's getting away unscathed. Some people might pay for it in terms of they're somewhere else next year, but it's going to be the stink in that case would be on everybody. And, you know, I do agree with that. I think that, look, the one thing is that if that game against Columbus, which we did on Monday, was the best and the worst of what these Toronto Maple Leafs can be. They can be so skilled that they make incredible plays, but they don't pay enough attention to detail yet that the same players on the ice for the great plays are also on the ice for the big mistakes against. And one of the things I really do believe, guys, is that they have to turn the team over to their star players. They have to say, look, with the way the cap is going to be with this team, you guys are going to have to drive us. And I think that they have to let them drive them in all situations. I know what Babcock is trying to say, that he doesn't trust them all in all situations. But I think the only way, it's like teaching your kid to swim. You throw them in the deep end and you say, sink or swim. Let's go.
Do you?
Do they at least get water wings?
Do they get any flotation device?
Well, this is why I'm no longer allowed to go with the pool to Matt with Max. So,
yeah, but yeah, aside from that, yeah. It's supervised pool visits going forward. Elliot, right. Is there anyone that we've been too hard on through all of this?
No, I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know if I would say that.
Okay.
Like you know what, honestly, Ashley, I think, you know what, I think when it's not going well, it comes with the territory, right? Like, I'm a big believer in you do it as a team. If you guys have a good show in the morning, or if you guys have a bad show in the morning and one guy feels good about the show they had, like, what good is that?
I feel personally attacked. I feel like I need to know who you've been talking to, and I feel like I need to check the text messages on both Ziggy and Scotty Mac's phone, Elliot.
Well, we know that Ziggy is the biggest egomaniac alive, so it's probably him. But you know, like the way I look at it is, when you rise as a team, you drown as a team,
yeah.
Right? Like that's the thing of, like, I remember we're talking about with Glenn Healy when he played. Like, he would talk in Toronto, even the fourth line center had a cardio. The rewards here, if you succeed, they're enormous, and they're enormous for everyone. And that's kind of the way I look at it.
What's the tipping point for Mike Babcock? Because you could I saw it on the bench a little bit in Columbus, and then his post-game media scrum, you saw obviously his comments about the penalties. When does he finally put it on the players? Because I know in 31 Thoughts you say he takes a lot of heat for a lot of the guys and what's going on in Toronto right now. When does he finally just say, you know what, let's give it to the guys that deserve all this heat?
I think he does from time to time. I mean, you talked about it. Like, after that game against Columbus on Monday, he did not protect them. And he just said, look, like, the penalties, you can't do that. But after the game in Boston, he did protect them. Like, I know people went crazy about the comment about your best players have to dominate. But if you actually watch that whole scrum, it wasn't like he was throwing the gauntlet on them. I thought he actually did protect them after a game that they lost. But, you know, the one thing about Babcock is he definitely gets his comments in. You're never, Mike, like with him, you always know how he's feeling. And I think sometimes he feels the need to protect, and sometimes he needs to point out. But the one thing he does do is he does take a lot of the heat and he doesn't complain about it. I know that sometimes he doesn't like what we write and say, but he never says it's unfair that this happens. And if that ever goes away where they decide they're going to make the change, then the excuse of Babcock is going to be taken away from a lot of these people. And then the heat has to go somewhere else. It's not going to be easy for them.
With Elliot Friedman. And here's the thing. By the way, ask the boarding recording to calm down. You're Elliot Friedman, damn it. You've got things to say. Here's your flight to Montreal boarding right now.
The flight takes off.
The airport is right now the place of the most selfish behavior in the world. I could be the most important guy on the planet and they wouldn't care. Like, this is the airport is where the most selfish behavior in the world happens.
No question.
Shouldn't you be on the plane now? Isn't first class board first?
Oh.
Don't you worry. I'll get there fine.
Yeah, that's how you act when you're in first class. I get there when I get there. They're not giving my seat away. Yeah.
Elliot. I want to come back to Matthews and Marner, and I've been hammering this play without the puck point. This is not a hockey IQ thing with guys like Matthews and Marner. These are smart, highly skilled hockey players. Yeah. This is a choice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know,
it's a will.
It's a will. Right. It's a desire. And that for me is problematic because I'm tired of hearing about the lessons this team has to learn because they're so young. Well, relative to their peers, most teams are built, not all, but most are built around players in that age bracket. Like, they're not kids anymore, and they're certainly not being paid like it.
You know, I've had a lot of conversations, Scott, this week about people just talking about how, you know, the money now, who's getting paid now? It's the kids on the second contract. And the thing is, just because you're getting paid the most money and you're expected to produce because you're getting paid the most money doesn't mean that you are necessarily equipped to handle it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of guys who are great players at a young age, but how many of them were the best in their career at that young age? Even Crosby and Ovechkin, and Crosby won pretty early. Even those guys were great players. McDavid's a great player. But I guarantee you, by the time they get to, but at least in Crosby and Ovechkin's case, when they got older, they were better. You know, McDavid, I still think he's really young. But I guarantee you, when he's 27, 28, he's going to be an even better player than he is now. And I think that, you know, you can't criticize. It's tough to say for a lot of these GMs. But I think they feel that the difference between expectation and how really ready they are for that expectation is not equal. That the way the sport is now, you're paying these guys young, but that doesn't mean they're ready for the responsibility of it in terms of, you know, what it really takes to play and be successful. Like, Mike, I would bet you would look at it and say, how good a player were you at 22 and how good a player were you later in your career just because of the experience. And I think that's the one thing we forget. Yes, they have to show greater will. I think they have to show greater commitment to the defensive side of the game, no question. But it takes a while to get there. And that's the one thing. We're looking at this and saying these guys have got to be the best players. But are they really at a point where in their career where they can be expected to know everything there is to know about what it takes to be great?
Yeah, and I do agree with you. Every year you're in the league, you learn something. And if you don't keep improving and learning something, it's going to go the other way on you. You don't stay the same in any sport, for that matter. But the thing that I keep going back to and the questions people keep asking is, has the money changed these players where they're just not playing? Has it affected their play? And it's hard to say no.
Well, I do think it changes you. I don't know how it can't. But I think also it changes other people's perception of you. Like, look at Nylander last year. The perception of him certainly changed. And he struggled with it. And I've wondered, ever since the whole Marner thing unfolded the way it did right at training camp, I've wondered about him too. I think he's feeling it. He looks like he's feeling it. And I think the perception of him in the city has changed. And I just think that that's the way it is. And the expectation on Matthews has changed because of the contract he got. I think everything changes. You know, there's we've always, you know, with the Maple Leafs and stuff and sports in general, there's always a greater expectation on you the more you get paid. And with that salary becomes a bigger expectation on you from your team and from your fan base. And that's why I think there's some of the tension there, no question about it, because, you know, like, I never begrudge anybody getting paid what they get. I mean, I think everybody in the world should be go out there and go and cut their best deal. But I think even in our business, guys, when we sign up for it, we know that we're going to be judged publicly and we can be judged harshly. And that's part of the deal. We know what we're getting into.
So what changes then can you make as an organization to help these guys get over the hump? Because if you're in it together, it's not as easy as saying you got this money, you need to figure it out. 31 Thoughts that just came out, you talk about Ralph Kruger with the Buffalo Sabres. And I think it was Carter Hutton who's like, we haven't even really seen the inside of a video room. We do small meetings, which allows younger players to speak out and not feel intimidated. They change the way things have been happening, and the results have been there for the Sabres. So is there something that can be done differently in terms of the Maple Leafs to help these players acclimate sooner?
Well, I think one of the things is, I believe that for the organization on down, like when Babcock came here and when Shanahan came here and Dubas has echoed it, they've got to create a situation where their players can feel supported. Mm-hmm. But you also have to have the freedom as a coach to grind them once in a while. Like, I mean, we all hate our bosses from time to time, but sometimes we need them to grind us. But the one thing I wrote, Ashley, and the one thing I do believe is, I just think it's time. I understand what Babcock's doing. He's saying you can't have all the responsibility until you show you're ready for it. But I think sometimes you just have to say, you know what, we're giving you that responsibility and we're going to make you improve it on the job. And that is the one thing that I personally from outside would like to see. You know, Matthews got beat on that faceoff in the Columbus game and it led to the 2-0 goal for the Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of not letting him take another D-zone faceoff, maybe just got to keep throwing him out there, hoping that some experience at it and pride to get better will make him get better.
Back into the pool. It all goes back to that analogy.
Water wings free.
You better swim, kid. Okay, Dad, you're out.
Come get me if there's problems, Dad. With Elliot Friedman. Oilers last night, Ovechkin gets a couple for the Caps, 3-1 Washington, and then it turns back into the McDavid Draisaitl show. So yep. They stave off. It's amazing, Elliot, what preceding reputations do to a team. Edmonton is shut out twice in a row. McDavid has held pointless in three straight games for the first time in his career. They're still 7-2-1, and we're screaming about regression to the mean and how it's going to happen. So last night they stave off this regression.
Yeah.
What do we believe about what the Oilers can be at this point?
Boy, we're a real barrel of laughs in the media, eh? 7-2-1. Oh, they're going to stink in 2 weeks.
Well,
I can't wait for it.
They just might.
Yeah. You know, I don't think they're as good as 7-2-1, but I think what it shows, Scott, is that, and I think it goes back to what we talked about with Leafs a bit. If you've watched them this year, you know, aside from when McDavid and Draisaitl are on the ice, and even when they're on the ice sometimes, they're more boring than they used to be. Like, you know, the last couple of years, they traded chances. They went up and down the ice. They weren't exactly a group that accepted structure. I think one of the things they've really learned this year is that they've accepted structure. They say we have to play a certain way if we're going to be successful. Now, some of those guys have bigger green lights than others, and I still think as a team they're not that deep. It's something they're going to have to work on. But the fact is that they have accepted that there is a certain way they're going to have to play a better chunk of the time. And that's why I think they're going to be better off. I don't think they're going to have this kind of winning percentage all year long, but I think they will be more competitive because they've accepted there's a certain way they have to do things.